The views and opinions expressed on this show are not intended to provide healthcare advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Views expressed here do not necessarily reflect those of Hay House Radio or its staff.
Unlock the power of your mind. This is Provocative Enlightenment with Eldon Taylor.
Welcome to another hour dedicated to exploring enlightenment, what it means and what it might be to be enlightened. This is an hour devoted to learning something more about ourselves, an hour designed to help us integrate all of our knowledge and perhaps even challenge some of our ideas about the world we live in and the people we have become. Indeed, an hour for the open-minded, willing to think and perhaps even risk their foregone conclusions in order to discover an entirely new dimension in their thoughts and being. I'm Eldon Taylor, and this is Provocative Enlightenment. All right, our chat room opens the moment our show goes live, so you can join my partner, Ravinder, there now. You can log on by going to eldontaylor.com/chat. That's eldontaylor.com/chat. Ravinder will be sharing with me some of her thoughts on today's subject. So all of you in the chat room, my apologies for stealing some of her attention away from you. With that bit of information now out of the box, it's time for you to say hello to everyone, Ravinder.
Hi, everyone. Do come join us in the chat room. Everyone's beat me there today, so they're just clamoring at the door. So come to eldontaylor.com/chat. I will talk to you there.
All right. Each week, I read a few of your letters as our way of honoring the role you play in our show. Last week, our show was about psi research and the debate over parapsychological phenomena, real or illusion. Elaine wrote, "It was a good interview, Eldon. I especially found it interesting to talk about bias in terms of psychic phenomena and how to avoid bias in research, although it is complicated." Robin wrote, "Bias or diets? Just kidding. Love the way you handled that. That's why I follow you. Great show." Jack wrote, "It is interesting that his lack of mention of the 27 entities that can take over John of God seems to indicate that Dr. Krippner feels the healing done at the Casa is all based upon the immune system and the placebo effect." Peter wrote, it is the experience that interests me more than the data. As you pointed out, once one has had one of those psi experiences, they see the world differently. Science is not the end-all that it arrogates to itself. Don commented, "I like Dr. Krippner, but his insistence that you don't need to posit God or the supernatural to explain parapsychological phenomena seems inconsistent with much of the actual work by parapsychologists. Take the NDE events as one such example." Jonathan wrote, "Hello and thanks for the incredibly insightful books. I bought your book, Mind Programming, by sheer accident. I was looking for something else, but I'm glad I bought it. Since then, I got your book, Choices and Illusions, which helped clarify the initial book. Today, I bought What Does That Mean and What If? If they are anything like the first two, I am sure I'll do a lot of reading. Once again, thanks for the books and your intriguing work." Well, thank you, Jonathan. I do appreciate your support. David wrote, "I can feel your book and CD changing my life for the better. I am a true believer now in the power of your mind. Thank you so very much." You're more than welcome, David. Thank you for your feedback. Christine wrote, "I just wanted to share a story with you about how your book saved my father's life. You'll like this one, Ravinder." "I picked up your book on vacation and was reading the chapter on synchronicity in which you described an incident where your wife reads on a cereal box that the sensation of burning lungs can be a symptom of a heart attack. Somehow I paused after reading this chapter and felt that I needed to pay attention and absorb the information in the chapter. My father, who was picking me up from the airport, looked pale and complained that his lungs were burning, but he thought that this was due to the pollution in Denver. He insisted he was fine, but I told him I had just read that these symptoms may mean he was having a heart attack. I took him to the hospital just in the nick of time, and his right artery was 99% blocked. They did surgery that day, and he probably would have died if I didn't take him to the hospital when I did. Thank you for your book, not only for the fascinating and empowering information you present, but for also helping save my father's life." Okay, Rav, now you're the woman that read it on the cereal box. So, you know, that And thank you, Christine, for the letter you just gave me. I think us, another warm fuzzy. Both you and your father are blessed. And I believe that synchronicity happens to all of us in our everyday lives if we'll but pay attention. Bless you, and please give your father my very best. Now to today's show, the secret behind the secret. Many of you asked for this show, an appraisal of the so-called secret, the law of attraction, and some of the other popular ideas of today. And that includes examining the James Arthur Ray case and Bob Proctor's claim that Ray attracted the Sedona disaster. This show could be very controversial because we have agreed to pull no punches. So let's begin by looking at the Sedona disaster. You know, I'm going to suggest that we do this as a mind experiment, the kind that you get more than 20 of in my book, What If? The idea behind a mind experiment is to actually explore an idea by participating in a sort of vicarious way. So let's use some imagination and see if I can't kind of lead you through a mind experiment having to do with the Sedona tragedy. Begin by, what if you found yourself at a retreat? The leader is excited as he invites everyone to experience their real unlimited selves. The tempo of his voice increases as the pitch and the cadence of his delivery rise and fall like a compositional masterpiece. The excitement is contagious, and soon you and everyone else in attendance are feeling excited. Some are even experiencing genuine goosebumps. All of this is leading to a special exercise that will cleanse you forever of doubt and fear. It's as if you're going to get asked to walk the hot coals, but that's not the deal today. No, today it's not a fire walk. It's not rappelling down some steep building edge or cliff, not a bungee jump or anything like that. Today, it all sounds much safer because you're going to undertake the Native American sweat lodge tradition. When the group is adequately prepared, the leader shows them into the lodge, a large tent. The air, I want you to feel, is very thick and hot. Some chanting begins, and the leader speaks much softer now, as though he is about to guide everyone through a dream. As time passes, the air grows ever heavier, and you have more and more trouble breathing. You are all told not to leave the tent. You know, don't quit when you're almost there. Don't quit just before the miracle. The person next to you is gasping. You look at her and can tell that she is about to collapse. Another across from you falls backward from her sitting position as though she has just passed out. You can't believe how hard it is to breathe. The sweat pours off of you. You are oscillating between some form of full ordinary consciousness and some sort of out there trip. You question yourself, am I supposed to feel this way? Are they burning some kind of hallucinogenic? You're about to speak out when another woman attempts to stand, only to fall on her face. You think, two down and a third, maybe a fourth counting me, about to fall. It then dawns on you like a sudden epiphany. You could die in here, and no one would know until much later. Then you think, are those two women okay? At what point do you take the initiative to check on yourself and others? At what juncture do you realize that your leader may just be a little unreliable for this kind of event? Let's assume that you are lucid enough to recount how you got here. You didn't fill out any health record or any other form for that matter that might disclose either physical or mental conditions. No one asked you about your fitness for this sort of thing. Some of those in the lodge are clearly fitter than others, and some are closer to the tent entrance. And so they are both further from the fire and more able to breathe easily. You are here to gain spiritual insight. Are you responsible for what is going on around you? Are you responsible for those that are going through this with you? Or have you abrogated all responsibility and turned it over to the leader? If you have a genuine insight, will you claim it as yours? Well, you likely will. Are you willing to claim the process as yours, irrespective of whatever you gain? Should you be? Is there ever any such thing as a genuine spiritual gain that is yours without any personal responsibility? I mean, what if your vision leads you to believe that God has instructed you to eliminate your sister-in-law because she was corrupting your brother? Do you just blindly do as you think you have been told, or do you take full responsibility for everything that you do? In my book, What Does That Mean? The story of two brothers who were literally told by God to do just this sort of thing and thereby killed two members of their family, asks this question. When do you question even your deepest held belief? When do you insist that there is no authority high enough to get you to do certain things, or perhaps ignore certain other things? So here you are in the sweat lodge. What do you do? Do you just go with it and leave it all to the professionals? I mean, the leader and his team are professional, aren't they? You realize something. There are no medics, no nurses, no doctors, or other medical professionals on hand. But wait a minute. Did the Native Americans bring their doctors to the sweat lodge? Sweat lodges have been around forever. What could go wrong? In October 2009, the New York Times reported midway through a two-hour sweat lodge ceremony intended to be a rebirthing experience. Participants say some people began to fall desperately ill from the heat, even as their leader, James Arthur Ray, a nationally known New Age guru, urged them to press on. The Times article continues, "There were people throwing up everywhere," said Dr. Beverly Bunn, 43, an orthodontist from Texas, who said she struggled to remain conscious in the sweat lodge. Dr. Bunn said Mr. Ray told the more than 50 people jammed into the small structure, people who had just completed a 36-hour vision quest in which they fasted alone in the desert, that vomiting, quote, was good for you, that you are purging what your body doesn't want, what it doesn't need, close quote. But by the end of the ordeal on October 8th, emergency crews had taken 21 people to the hospital. Three have since died. Mr. Ray, who calls himself a teacher of practical mysticism, gained widespread exposure through an appearance on the Oprah Winfrey Show. Dr. Bunn, who had signed up for a $9,695 spiritual warrior experience, offered the first eyewitness account of the sweat lodge. Dr. Bunn recounted that Mr. Ray told the group he had extensive experience in sweat lodges, he holds a spiritual warrior event annually, and that his sweats were very intense. Mr. Ray sat by the tent flap door, Dr. Bunn said, which remained sealed except for pauses when fresh air briefly circulated as additional rocks heated in an outdoor fire were brought in. The UK's Guardian reported on the event with this headline, Death Valley, Three New Agers Die in a Sweat Lodge. Reporting on upcoming lawsuits over the matter, the online blog Legal Fish, the Daily Tackle, had this to say. Three people died and about 20 were hospitalized after 2 hours in a makeshift sweat lodge, an idea Ray borrowed from Native American tradition. Just like a modern-day sauna, the sweat ritual is used for physical and spiritual cleansing, while traditional ceremonies err on the side of caution, limiting their gatherings to 4 to 12 people, and encouraging participants to leave if they feel uncomfortable. Ray urged a crowd of 64, many of whom were falling ill and collapsing on the scene, to stay in the dome structure that reached temperatures of over 110 degrees. The Cult Education Forum published these remarks by contributor Anti-Cult, whose remarks made before the incident seemed to forewarn of reasons to think carefully before trusting James Arthur Ray. Quote, Oprah Winfrey is the person who literally made James Arthur Ray. Oprah put the blatant scam artist on her TV show several times when she did her shows on The Secret. Oprah introduced him to her naive audience, and James Ray went to town with it. Before Oprah, James Ray was a nobody. After Oprah, he was able to bilk thousands of people off of people. Oprah did not ask James Arthur Ray one single critical question. She didn't check out his background. James Ray was never challenged on a single point or claim he was making. At the exact moment he was on her show, there were many very serious complaints about James Ray on Oprah's own message boards. Now, anyone can write anything on the Internet nowadays, so just how true this statement is should come into question. As for blame, most everyone seems to be able to find someone to blame and a good deal of desire to do so. Some of the stories and shouts of blame may well be entirely unfounded. Just because someone says it happened this way doesn't necessarily mean so. With that said, what no one is saying anything about is the obvious elephant in the room. At what point is the individual responsible for remaining in this environment? As it turns out, in the real world, there was at least one medical professional present, albeit an attendee. Does this attendee share any responsibility for ignoring what eventually led to the death of three people? Research, and I've covered this with you all before, has repeatedly demonstrated that the area of the brain responsible for decision-making literally shuts down when an authority is present. Did the leader actually have that much authority, or is it just a habit to surrender it? Did the orthodontist surrender their power as well? Should there have been a medical intake form that included a psychological history as well as a usual medical conditions questionnaire? I think that is a given. Why were none employed? To a professional healthcare person, that should have been, that in and of itself should have been an alert. How many of those in the tent were on medication and what kind of meds? A three-day fast followed by a sweat lodge, and those participating are not pre-screened for healthcare issues? Bad things do sometimes happen to very good people. Why? Well, I can't really say with any certainty, but this much certainly can be said. Good people seeking a good outcome trusted someone else with their lives, and bad things happened. Leaders, teachers make mistakes, and we're all supposed to know that. After the incident, Ray left Sedona without talking to police and returned to his home in California, where he continued conducting his self-help seminars and events. Obviously, at some point, Ray returned to Arizona, where he was tried on three counts of manslaughter and convicted. Should he have been? People began together to do something spiritual, a spiritual warrior's quest, using their best intentions, visualizing the desired outcome, expecting, even knowing that they will have a genuine spiritual breakthrough. They invest their time, money, and hopes, or should I say, they practice the secret. The law of attraction takes over, but the outcome is not what they planned. Why? Now, one of the problems with the so-called law of attraction I have covered on this show before, a law is reliable, like the law of gravity. How can one assert that what happens to all of us does so only because we attracted it? The small baby thrown to the floor by her impatient teenage father and later dies as a result is somehow supposed to have attracted this? Are all infants that cry attracting violence, not nourishment, attention, and love? Imagine a child, perhaps your own. Let's give the child the name Bobby. Bobby wants very badly to win the state competition, and let's say math is cool competition. Bobby is good at math, really good. He practices and studies for the upcoming competition. Bobby has heard of visualization, so he begins visualizing the victory. Bobby reads all about visualizing success. He reads the books that teach the power of attraction, the power of the mind to create, the power to focus, visualize in detail and with emotion, and to let the visualization go, and on and on and on. He practices the secret perfectly. Now Bobby goes to state where he does well, but he does not win. He doesn't win anything. He goes away feeling sad and broken. Bobby knows the winner. The winner didn't practice, study, or visualize. In fact, the winner didn't even seem to care if they won or not. Bobby doesn't understand and comes to you for answers. What do you tell him? Just pause now and generally reflect on, what do you tell Bobby? What would you tell your own? Our minds are genuinely powerful. I am on record as insisting that the power of belief, the absolutely awesome, incredible power of belief, is the genie in your life. Let me say that again. The absolutely awesome and incredible power of your belief is the genie in your life. Now, that said, we need to remember to apply our best and then turn it over. This or something better according to the highest good of all concern. Well, that's my turnover affirmation. Now, I'm a great believer in enjoying life. I'm also a strong believer in a good work ethic. And I see nothing wrong with the idea of working hard. To some nowadays, hard work is equivalent to a swear word. Indeed, we seem to live at a time when entitlement has taken the place of self-reliance. In fact, over the years, I have received at least a dozen or more letters from people who have written to condemn my use of the word work. They insist that work is a bad word. But see, how is work a bad word? I would suggest that the word is only a bad word to those who have never learned the joy of work. Good old-fashioned hard work. Perhaps hard work brings images of toil. By the sweat of my brow, metaphors may pop into mind. But even this, when performed with an attitude of joy, becomes the opposite of the same activity when begrudged. Joy of work, you might ask? And again, I would emphatically say joy. Work is not a negative word. One of my favorite writers, Og Mandino, wrote, "One of the painful prices we are paying for our so-called modern lifestyle in the final quarter of this 20th century, and that is that we are all becoming more and more alike. We all suffer through the same television shows, read the same magazines, wear the same fashions, and buy the same new frozen foods. We are all, as the years pass, falling in step in order to march to the beat of the same drummer, racing forward or backward at the same pace as all others, smiling almost on command, mass-produced beings with no more individuality than any of the millions of saltine crackers that emerge daily from the ovens of Nabisco." Well, as a student of the mind and human nature, I am very aware of the role belief has in determining the direct delimiting of that undefined perspective we simply call potential. Now, juxtapose Mr. Mandino's observation with potential. What is the real human potential? What is your potential? I ask myself all the time, who am I? Does the law of attraction bring only what I desire? Can I just sit back and visualize success and be successful? Are the Warren Buffetts, Bill Gates, and Steve Jobs of the world just master attractors like giant magnets? Or have they had to work hard, long hours, undergo difficulty, show tenacity, and stay in there with a vigor of an intense competitor? Is being competitive practicing the secret? Is hard work invoking the principles of mind and applying them through sweat? Is the law of attraction supposed to be about being competitive and working hard? Apple this past week became the largest corporation in the world. If you think about that, Apple has numerous lawsuits against many competitors for patent infringements right now, and just last week won a major victory in the European courts on just one of these infringements. Is this form of competition how you use the law of attraction? How the secret works? The mind has been shown to be able to affect our bodies in very meaningful ways, indeed even influence our DNA. The power of the mind to heal, to overcome seemingly impossible obstacles, to create and explore, and so much more. The power of the mind is truly remarkable. But does it create every thought we have? All right, Ravinder, that's my rant. You've got about 1 minute to introduce a couple of ideas to this subject, and we'll pick it up after break.
Oh, you always give me just a few seconds. And you're right, I can rant about this for a long time. You and I have had many rants about it. I think the whole issue is very, very complicated. It's not a simple, clear cut, what you expect is what you get. Although, in sometimes that does apply. But you cannot tell me that Elizabeth Smart created it. You know, she didn't create someone coming through her window and stealing her off and doing all of that stuff. The Iranian females, you know, the doctors, the professors, they didn't ask for a change in regime that had them, you know, locked up. So it is a lot more complicated. On the other hand, you know, birds of a feather flock together. What you expect is what you get. You have to believe in yourself, but you have to be realistic, I think, about what it is and how much you're going to put aside to the law of attraction and how much effort you're going to apply.
All right. Well, I don't like the word law of attraction. We've already discussed that. Principles of attraction, that's great. You know, But there is no secret to this. You're listening to Provocative Enlightenment on Hay House Radio. We're discussing the secret behind the secret, or the absence thereof. If you're not already in our chat room, now's a great time to join the conversation. Just go to eldentaylor.com/chat. Stay with us during the break. You won't want to miss what's coming up in the next half hour of the show, and we'll take your calls. We'll be right back after these words from some of our friends.
Unlock the power of your mind. This is Provocative Enlightenment with Eldon Taylor.
Welcome back. If you just joined us, we're discussing the secret or absence thereof behind the secret. But before we get back to today's show, I want to invite you to like our Facebook fan page for Provocative Enlightenment Radio. As a fan of the show, you'll receive some special announcements and incentives from time to time as our way of thanking you for your support. I would also like to invite you to join me on Facebook while you're there. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter. If you like our show, spread the word. We genuinely appreciate your support. And please keep your comments coming. And one more item of business. Please check out the upcoming I Can Do It conference in Pasadena. I'll be speaking there, and I'd love to meet every one of you in person. So if you can, put it on your calendar and get your tickets early. All right, let's get back to the show. Ravinder, just before the break, you said to me, I always only give you seconds. You know, we've got some calls to go to, but we have about 23-plus minutes left in the show. I'm not going to give you seconds. Go ahead. Take as much time as you'd like.
I thought you were about to say, I'm going to give you 23 seconds.
No. Well,
thanks, mate. No, I do think it is a really big issue. There is a lot to be said for the power of belief. But it does come down to the power of belief can only maximize your own abilities. So like we have a program for basketball. You know, you can play the basketball program till you're blue in the face, but it's not going to turn everyone into Michael Jordan.
No, but Michael Jordan said he loved our basketball program, and that it would help everybody be better basketball players.
You become better. So you need to be realistic about everything. You know, we have had some really incredible stories with some of the Inner Talk programs, but I always caution everyone when I'm talking on the phone. You know, just because one person, we had an instance with a Prosperity and Abundance program where a girl's next door neighbor gave her a free car because he was doing taxes and he had tax write-off or something like that. You know, so we have that story. We have someone else who found a ticket and won X dollars. I don't remember how much it was. Or someone else who got a free vacation using the Prosperity and Abundance program. But that doesn't hold for everyone. I think the most interesting...
Indeed, honestly, I mean, in all fairness, they may not even be causally connected.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true. So I think everything does take work on the backside of it. You take self-responsibility, but it's not a case of just this is what I want. I had a girl come into the store once, and she said to me she had quit her job. She wanted to find a different job, and she knew exactly what it was that she wanted. So I said to her, well, what kind of job are you looking for? And she gets out this piece of paper from her bag, and it's like she's rehearsed this. And she had 20, 30 points on this. And it was, I want a job where I'm respected. I want a job where people care about me. I want a job where I've got flexible hours. I want a job. And she just went on and on and on about what she wanted. But it wasn't, I want a job in math or I want a job helping people. There wasn't anything practical in it. It was all about a job that helped her feel a certain way.
How many times, Rav, have you seen, I mean, whenever we're looking for someone, I always ask them, bring me a paragraph about why you want this job. And how many times have you seen that paragraph come in and it is a description of what you're saying? You know, it's basically, well, now what I need is a job because I haven't had one in 6 months. And it doesn't answer that question. I remember when I was a boy, very young boy, I think 14 or 15 years old, because I started paying Social Security when I was 15. I'd lie about my age. But at any rate, a fellow took me aside, a friend of the family. It was very successful. And he said to me, you know, I was talking to him about what I should know, you know, to go into the workforce, et cetera. And he said to me, said, Eldon, whenever you apply for a job, if you go out there and you let the person know that you really want this particular job. Let's say you're looking at a shoe store. You're going into a shoe store. You let that owner know that what you want to do is learn everything you can learn about shoes. You have just you really want to work in a shoe store. It isn't that you're just looking for a job. You wouldn't go to a grocery store. You're here in his shoe store because you're seeking to learn that business. And you do this, you communicate it with enthusiasm, and you go in knowing as much as you can know basically about a shoe store and the shoe business and why you would like to learn that. And you communicate that idea. And then when you get that job, you just show hustle. You really hustle. You go that extra mile. You're there a few minutes early. You stay a few minutes late. You never ask for anything extra. You will never want for work. And you know what? I applied that, and I have never wanted for work. Indeed, maybe it's a little embarrassing, but you know, I wasn't always, I mean, I went to a grocery store and told them I wanted to learn the grocery business, but they weren't hiring. So I went to a shoe store and told them I wanted to learn the shoe business. But I can remember doing just that in a shoe store and filling out the application and the owner telling me, well, let me think about it. And later, a day later or so, getting a phone call at my home. And he told me, okay, I've decided to hire you. Can you come in on whatever day it was? And I said, well, I've taken another job. And he said to me, well, what shoe store did you go to work for? And I said, oh, no, I went to work for a grocery store or wherever I did. I think it was a grocery store in Albertsons. And he said, I thought you really wanted to know the shoe business, which is embarrassing. But the point of the matter is, when you go to an employer and you really show that employer that you have something you want to give them, that's when they're interested. And that's a part that seems to be missing from our secret today.
And the fact is, you know, in your example between the shoe store and the grocery store, if you'd ended up taking the shoe store job, you would have given that your all as well.
Yeah, of course.
And that makes the difference. So that is
I have never had a job that the employers would not have hired me back or didn't try to hire me back, come actively after me. I could tell a story about one that actually tracked me down to try and hire me back. But, you know, the bottom line is the secret is that you have to combine it with an intense desire and your best efforts. You actually have to be involved. It's not something that you can do. You can't just succeed by sitting on your sofa visualizing.
No.
All right. Do you have something else you want to add before we take a phone call?
No, I think we've got some great callers on the line, so we should take a call.
All right, let's do just that. Let's go to line one, and let's talk to Maggie from Michigan. Maggie, welcome to Provocative Enlightenment. Are you going to beat me up today?
No, I'm not. Why would I beat you up, Eldon? I love listening to your show.
Well, thank you very much.
I haven't heard what Bob Proctor said about him attracting this, but What do you think the lesson was in all of this? Lesson do you think he should have taken away from this incident?
First of all, I think Bob Proctor, forgive me, is, you know, he's out of line stepping up and saying the law of attraction caused this, okay? Mm-hmm. And what he is saying is that Ray actually attracted it, that everything happened according to the law of attraction. You know, it's how Ray did things, how he visualized it, how he imagined things in his haste that attracted it. You know, and I have obviously great problems with that. Here's what I think.
Yeah, well, I don't think James Ray visualized three people dying and being brought
to court.
No, neither
do I. I think that's absurd.
Yeah,
it's absurd.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But this is what I think. Here's the bottom line. You must always take responsibility for who you are and where you are. You know, I think that this entire scenario would never have happened if the leader, for all intent and purposes, was there to lead as opposed to play Messiah. And sometimes that's what happens with our so-called gurus. They can be the best intended, but they like people venerating them. And that shortcuts individual decision-making. You know, as I've said before, area of the brain responsible for discrimination literally shuts down in the presence of your authority, your doctor, your pastor, etc. So, you know, as an authority in that situation, we should be aware of that. And we should be cautioning people as the Native Americans did. If you, if you're not feeling well, you know, you need to get up and leave, et cetera.
I have attended a sweat lodge ceremony, and they did tell me, you know, if you're feeling faint or sick or like you need to get out, you're free to.
Oh, we're losing some callers there. Something's going on in the switchboard. We're sorry about that. I agree with you. If you're not feeling up to your best, and I hope you're still there hearing us, even though we've lost you on the board, you know, you do need to take that initiative. It's easy for somebody to be a cowboy, and it may be in this instance that's why Ray was convicted, because it's kind of a cowboy, nonchalant, you know, bigger hammer attitude to say, hang in there, you can do this, you know, a little bit of vomit where your body's just throwing off what you don't need, don't leave, and those kinds of comments, as opposed to looking out for the individual, you know, health and welfare of the person. But with that said, each of us has a responsibility to be ever aware that we have this propensity to just, you know, let it go and turn everything over. We need to remember that since that is a characteristic of who we are, that it's incumbent upon us to guard against it. It's incumbent upon us always to be where we can say, well, you know, I took responsibility and that's why I challenged it, as opposed to turn it over. And I'm afraid I would say that if the person you're talking to was walking on water, like the Dalai Lama says some of his monks now do. Do you have anything you want to add to that, Raph?
No, I totally agree. I think that what we can all learn from that particular experience is to take responsibility. It's very easy for us to take the view of the authority figure. And James Arthur Ray, in this instance, was the authority figure, and everyone just shut down their own thinking capability. You do need to take the time and understand that whoever is teaching you is human too. They can make their own mistakes as well. So you have to turn to your own internal guide.
Okay. Let's, on line three, we have Jennifer from San Francisco. And Jennifer, are you going to beat me up today?
No.
Okay.
I'm waiting for
that follower of the secret to come thrash me now. So go on. I'm sorry. Welcome to Provocative Enlightenment, Jennifer. What can we do for you?
I just want to know which CDs you would recommend for somebody who wants to just have the right thoughts so that we can try to just make a better, more positive, confident, I don't know about confident, but just a better positive future for ourselves. I've been listening to your shows, and you have repeatedly recommended some of your CDs on Inner Talk. And I wanted to know which ones you would recommend for somebody who, you know, kind of, you know, wants to go along with the law of attraction, like, you know, follow that, but do it with some CD or some help from your CDs. I don't know if I worded it right, but I think
I think I get the idea. But first of all, you know, I mean, we have programs. I could say to you very quickly as a cliche, well, you know, we have a program called Manifesting Your Vision. It's a great program. It truly is. But that last little caveat you added where go along with a secret, and that's where I go, whoa, put the brakes on a second, Jennifer. That's what we're saying. you can create all kinds of things in your mind, and we have these genuinely creative abilities, visualize, et cetera, and they are truly helpful. In fact, some research shows that you can visualize shooting free throws in basketball, and it's almost as effective as practicing shooting those free throws. But the emphasis that we're trying to communicate in today's show is that everything that we do combines action. So, if what you're looking to do is to be successful in business, I might turn you towards strategic planning and peak performance. If what you're looking to do is focus on manifesting a better loving relationship, I might turn you towards positive relationships or attracting the right love relationship. But when I did, you'd have to understand, and I would just tell you, look, inside each of these programs is this component about action. Some people, for example, in attracting the right love relationship may call the office and say, I don't get it. You know, these affirmations on here are talking about me being more willing to be accepting things that I have to do. I'm not interested in that. I want somebody that will do these things for me. But you see, the nature of the universe is such that I truly believe, as Ravinder said, birds of a feather flock together. My mother used to tell me that what we sow is what we reap. We do attract of kind. As an individual, when I am loving and caring and sharing and open and honest, it's easy for me to have a relationship with someone that is loving and caring and sharing and open and honest, and I'm really not interested in having something of that nature with a person who is not. So we naturally gravitate away and toward according to where we are ourselves. I've often used this metaphor. If you visit your local lounge quitting time, 5:30, 6 o'clock, you'll find a table or a group at a bar all complaining. They'll be talking about how the boss did this to them, how they got cut off in traffic, how they got this in the ticket, how their husband this or their wife that. These people, they gather to share information all of a kind. If you approach those people, you know, with, hey, isn't life fantastic? You're going to get the strangest, weirdest looks. You basically are quickly going to learn you don't belong at that table unless you can join in that kind of conversation. So the point I'm trying to emphasize here is that everything that you're going to visualize in your mind, everything that you're going to imagine, and every way that you're going to employ the secret in building your confidence and your self-esteem and going out there in the world, it's going to have this little word toil, this little word work that accompanies it. It requires action to make it happen. Do you want to add to that, Ravinder?
Yeah, I think I would actually take it, you know, from a whole different angle. We get lots and lots of calls on the phone all the time, and people are always asking for my recommendations. And I always tell them, first of all, I can't give recommendations because that's the responsibility of the person. Good point. I'm not in that person's mind. I don't know what it is that they need or want. I do get them to talk about what it is that they would like today. I mean, the question I often ask today is, what would help you feel better today? So don't think about the big goal, you know, I want to be rich and successful. Think about what it would take today. Well, perhaps to be rich and successful, you need to be better at your job. Perhaps you need to be more assertive. Perhaps you need to be more confident. You know, there's just other ways to do it, but I break it down into very small parcels. And then I tell people, okay, these are the kinds of programs I would think about. Take a look at the sample affirmations for yourself. You know, if you look at the sample affirmations and then decide, if this was my belief set, how would it assist me?
Okay, good. Jennifer, now, does that answer your question? Not
yes,
really. You're still looking for that final tape, aren't you? That final CD, aren't you?
No, so I'm just wondering what CD you would recommend for somebody who just wants to live a more positive life.
Right, great. And we don't recommend. But you know what I am going to do? I'm going to send you a gift. So you stay on the line, and Enoch will get your details when we conclude this call. And I'm going to send you a CD that I think you'll find beneficial based on what you're saying, okay?
All right, thank you.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for calling. All right, now that's violating my own rule, isn't it? But it's actually a gift, so that's okay, isn't it?
Gifts are always good. I enjoy those particular shows we do.
Well, let's go to line four and talk to Kelly in Indiana. Kelly, welcome to Provocative Enlightenment. Are you going to beat me up?
Actually, no.
Okay, good.
Thank you, Dr. Ellen, for taking my call. My question is actually, I was wondering if you or the viewers are familiar with a book called The Kabbalion and the Seven Hermetic Principles. And this is an ancient book that's thousands of years old. And in this book talks about seven actual so-called principles or laws of the universe, like cause and effect. And I don't think the law of attraction is a strong enough law to actually manifest everything that you actually want. I think there's other variables there that have to take a role. I personally think, Mr. Ray was basically a very big ego head because he neglected a lot of his customers. He was thinking about just about himself and how much money he could have been making in the event instead of actually supporting his fans and followers. And there's a lesson in every incident and occurrence. I actually had a friend who blamed me for some health problems that I'm going through right now, which was very hurtful. And she said that I was attracting it to myself because of this reason. And going through with what I'm going through now, I know that my so-called lesson here is to help other people who is going through the same thing I am going through to help educate them and just bring awareness to others. And I wanted to just want to know what your thoughts on that about, you know, having other rules or other principles or variables out there that could override this so-called law of attraction. I mean, you can believe in something very strongly, and I call it my fate. I wanted a job, and I focused on it, and I didn't get the job. And now, because of what I'm going through right now, I am so happy that I didn't get that job last year, because I wouldn't have been able to put the focus on that job that required a lot more energy and attention with what I'm going through right now. I have to schedule my day differently because of this new health issue that I didn't even know that I was aware of.
Right. Well, Kelly, we're about out of time, but very quickly. First of all, there's a wonderful country western song that I love. And then the song basically says, thank God our prayers are not always answered, you know?
Agreed.
And if you think about it, thank God that every thought we have doesn't just somehow automatically manifest. So you're absolutely right. I mean, the power of the mind, again, is incredible, but it does work in concert with a number of different, and I hate to use the word laws, but we'll just say a number of different aspects of how the universe works. The end result of that is, and I come back and say this, as far as I'm concerned, the so-called law of attraction is not a law at all. What it amounts to, the principles of the secret, all boil down to if you take your energy and your effort and you combine it with your best mental processes, you're more likely to realize what it is that you're seeking. I appreciate your phone call, Kelly. We're just flat out of time. We've come to the end of another hour of Provocative Enlightenment. I want to thank you all for joining us, and I hope you enjoyed our show and will join us again next week, same time and same place. And if you have comments on our show, do let us all know. Okay, until next time, wherever you are in the world, remember, believing in yourself always matters.